Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. Representative Stutes, she'll be here in a minute. It is now 1:21 p.m. on Monday, April 29, 2019. Before we begin, I want to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. This time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, at this point, we have Representative Wool, Representative Kopp, Representative Shaw, Representative Stutes, Representative Ledoux, my vice chair, and myself, Representative Klayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. And I would just note for folks in the room and members of the committee that we, and I'd recognize Representative Eastman has also joined us, that Representative Kopp has a bill up in resources that at some point he's going to get the signal that they need him, and we will recess to the call of the chair once he goes to the Resources Committee. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 49, Crime, Sentencing, Mental Illness, and Evidence, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. This is our third hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. At this time, we're going to take up amendments to House Bill 49. I'd like to put on record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. Our office received a total of 7 amendments from committee members. The amendment process will be treated like floor amendments. The maker of the amendment moves the amendment and speaks to it with a 3-minute limit. Then we will take questions, and questions will be limited to 1 minute per question. Then we will proceed to discussion with each member, limited to 3 minutes. And finally, the maker of the amendment will have 1 minute to wrap up. When we come to an amendment, the mover can either move the amendment or it will be withdrawn. We will not roll amendments to the back. And today we will begin with amendment number 1, Representative Ledoux.
I move amendment number 1.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, so what amendment number 1 does is this. Right now, if somebody's got a felony DUI, that's 3 DUIs, they still can actually get their license back within 10 years. Except if during those 10 years they've had any driving-related offenses, and then it actually is doomsday. You can never, ever get your license back. So what this bill does is it makes it so that you have the possibility of getting your license back within 10 years after your last driving-related offense. And this amendment, the language of this amendment was in is in 145, and it is also in the Senate's version of the crime bill. And it's hard to say which is going to be the vehicle now, so I'd like it in this version.
Questions for the maker of the amendment? Representative Eastman.
So could you give us an example of, someone who currently would be at a loss and then with this passage amendment would have a better situation?
Well, let's just say that somebody had, in their 20s, they'd gotten 3 DUIs. And then a couple of years after those 3 DUIs, which turns into felony DUIs, they had, despite that they weren't supposed to be driving, they had a driving while their license revoked, a ticket for anything, speeding, reckless driving, etc. So unless this amendment goes into effect, that person would be barred forever. With this amendment, if they had the felony DUI and then they'd done the wrong thing 2 years later, so let's say the felony DUI happened in 2010, and then in 2015 they'd had a driving while your license was revoked, it would allow them to get their license back in 2025.
Okay.
And it does one more thing, this amendment. Under current law, as long as you haven't had you had a driving-related offense within the 10 years after your license was revoked. Regardless of whether somebody was killed, maimed, paralyzed, etc., somebody is still entitled to try to get their license back. And we talked about that extensively, I think, during the course of hearings on either Senate Bill 54 or Senate or House Bill 132. At any rate, it was 312. Thank you. And there was some concern that people who had murdered other people because of a DUI or seriously maimed them should truly never be able to get their licenses back. So while this bill benefits those who have been, who were fortunate in that their driving offenses, their DUIs, didn't kill or seriously maim somebody, it actually makes things a little bit harder, or much harder, for somebody who has killed or maimed somebody in one of their original DUIs.
So, how does thank you. So, how does it deal with individuals who might have been charged with killing or maiming someone, but pled down to something that wasn't a violent criminal offense? It was some lesser offense.
It has to also be convicted. So if they were simply accused and then they pled down. But remember, Representative Eastman, that under the law as it stands now, those people can get their licenses back as long as they don't have a driving-related offense within the 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
So I'm looking at line 11 on page 1 where it's talking about the 10 years, and it's, you know, talking about criminal offenses. I think the driving related parts being taken out. What I'm trying to remember, where does a driving offense become criminal? So is reckless driving a criminal offense, or does that fall under like traffic offense?
I believe a reckless driving is actually a misdemeanor.
Okay. And so then
going through a stop sign, I do not believe is a criminal defense per se.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if someone...
Follow up, Representative Eastman?
Yes, thank you. So if someone's, I don't know, driving 120 miles an hour and they only get pegged for the speeding, then they wouldn't be caught up under this because it wouldn't actually be a criminal offense. It would just be a traffic offense.
That's correct, but I would suggest that somebody driving 120 miles an hour would more than likely be charged and convicted of but least a reckless driving offense.
Yeah, and I suspect.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Representative Eastman, you're very skilled at requesting permission to follow up. I've seen it many, 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 many times. I would encourage you to exercise those skills.
Thank you for insisting that I ask each time. I will do my best. So, on that score, if I think you're probably right that someone would probably at least initially be charged with it, but I guess I'm not always so sure that they would be convicted in that kind of situation, since pleading down is somewhat frequent. So I suspect that there might be any number of situations where that would only result in a traffic offense that was convicted, even if they were originally driving them. But I'm wondering if that is likely or not. So I'll leave that to someone who knows more to be able to answer, I guess.
We'd probably have to have somebody from the Department of Law tell us whether or not somebody who's driving 120 miles an hour would likely be charged or convicted with. Or maybe we can get Representative Kopp to answer the question.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
I'm certainly not the Department of Law, just so old, or a retired law enforcement officer, but the underlying facts always play into the severity of the charge. In other words, 120 miles an hour on a 5-mile stretch of road between here and Fairbanks with just you and hopefully not another moose? Probably not. But you're going to have a hefty speeding ticket. Maybe a negligent driving, which is a civil violation if there were other things going on. But if it was 120 miles an hour through Anchorage, anywhere in Anchorage, or it would be, reckless driving for sure because of the opportunity for hitting other vehicles, other pedestrians. So it just depends on where that occurs.
And remember, Representative Eastman, that under the current law, the person has not been convicted of a driving-related criminal offense. So this is actually tightening things up. Currently, they can be convicted of just a driving-related offense, and so the same questions relate to that as relate to the law as it now exists.
Thank you.
So I don't see other questions. I did have one question for the Department of Law, Ms. Schroeder. Pretty short question, I hope, or a short question and an even shorter answer. Does the administration have a position on this amendment?
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General to the Department of Law Criminal Division. Mr. Chairman, this provision is also found in the governor's crime package, and it's a policy call that was made by the legislature, and the administration does not object.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any other questions, and I'm removing my objection to amendment number one. Is there any other objection to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, then amendment number one is approved. That brings us next to amendment number two, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number two.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number two is in response to a drafting error. It moves a Department of Law reporting requirement from Section 54 to Section 56 of the bill. The requirement is to include the number of crime victims that participated in the prosecution of and court process relating to the offense in which the person was a victim.
Any questions for the maker of the amendment? Hearing and seeing none, I will withdraw my objection. Is there any further objection to amendment number two? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number two is approved. That brings us next to amendment number three, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number three.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number three makes repeatedly sending unsolicited and unwanted images of genitalia to another person harassment in the second degree, a Class B misdemeanor. This is a provision that was taken from the governor's sex offenses bill.
Is there any other any questions for the maker of the amendment? Representative Eastman?
No, but I do have a question for the department.
Ms. Schroeder. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. I was just curious how this came to be part of the governor's crime package, and what was the rationale?
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. Through the chair, Representative Eastman, this was perceived as a potential loophole in the law. In today's age, it's become more and more common for people to send photos of things to each other in this electronic day and age. And we actually did have a case where a person was repeatedly sending images of genitalia to somebody after they'd been told not to. And it is offensive, and we did not have the tools to address that, and so this closes that loophole.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Schroeder before we release her from the desk? Hearing and seeing none, are there any other questions about amendment number three? Hearing and seeing none, I will withdraw my objection to amendment number three. Is there any further objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number three is approved. That brings us next to amendment number four, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number four.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number four is in response to a drafting error. It removes Section 40 from the bill because the bill no longer has provisions related to viewing or production of an indecent picture.
Any questions about amendment number four? Hearing and seeing none, I will withdraw my objection to amendment number 4. Is there any further objection to amendment number 4? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 4 is approved. Brings us next to amendment number 5. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 5.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number 5 is in response to a drafting error. Online needs to be removed from the sex felony sentencing statutes and the sexual felony statute.
Basically, it looks like we got some of the online language in the first round, but we didn't get all of it. Any questions about amendment number 5? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Just trying to follow the amendment here. So, Section 37, so it's a new section, and what is it? Is it replacing something, or is it just new language? If so, what is it replacing?
It's not replacing, right? But if you hold on just a second, Eddie, we're back on record. Representative Eastman, just as an example, if you look in Section 6 of the bill, not the amendment, but in Section 5 of the bill is a better example. The crime, because of the change in definition, becomes enticement of a minor as opposed to online enticement of a minor. And if you look in Section 5, we've removed the word online from that provision of 1141-452D so that the crime doesn't reference online. And then when in looking through the bill, the Attorney General's office identified three other places where we hadn't removed it in those changes, but I'm happy to have Ms. Schroeder come up and explain what's going on. Ms. Schroeder, if you could come up and so what happens in Amendment 5 is this gets the three additional places that we needed to remove online, but I'll let Ms. Schroeder testify.
For the record, Casey Schroeder again. Mr. Chairman, do you want me just to explain what the amendment is doing, or?
I think both in relation to the amendment, but also in relation to the existing bill, because I think that's the reason why this is a little bit, it feels like all thumbs.
Mr. Chairman, the underlying bill, version M, deletes the word online from the crime of online enticement, such that any solicitation of a minor, regardless of whether or not a computer is used, would be criminalized. To that end, a number of conforming amendments need to be made to the sex offense sentencing statute, and that's what's happening on page 1 of amendment number 5. You're inserting a new section, section 37, which removes the word online from 1255-125-I-3 and 4. Just one moment. It's removing it from 155-125-I-3. And then, oh, that's right, the other one is in sub 2. So it's sub 2 and sub 3. And then the definition of most serious felony, online enticement is currently a most serious felony. So because we're calling it enticement of a minor, the word online needs to be deleted there. And that's on page 4. Lines 5 through 13 of the amendment. And then on page 4 of the amendment, the change to page 22, line 31, is deleting the word online from the definition of sexual felony. And Mr. Chairman, we briefly discussed this before the hearing, and you are assuring me that that's what's happening there.
Representative Eastman, follow up.
Follow up through the chair. By removing the word online, then, are we broadening the criminal offense so that it now encompasses things online without specifically mentioning it?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's exactly correct. The current law requires the use of a computer, so it requires the solicitation to occur over an electronic device. And as we know, that could easily happen in person or through a note, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to restrict that type of conduct to just a computer. So it broadens the offense and allows us to have criminal penalties for that sort of solicitation.
And follow up?
Sure, Representative Eastman, I'll pass over the current statute book that reflects the fact that the crime itself is defined as online enticement. Go ahead, Representative Eastman, with your next
question.
Yes,
and so I'm, one second here. So my question is, through the chair, if this amendment weren't to go through, how would this type of behavior currently be addressed by the department?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the change to the criminal offense itself is already included in the CS. If the amendment is not adopted, it will be confusing for practitioners because we will have a crime of enticement of a minor and we will not have a corresponding sentencing statute. And the sentencing for sex offenses lists out the name of the statute and then lists the penalties. And I can assure you that we will litigate that and we may lose. So we need these cleanup amendments to pass if this is going to happen.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Schroeder? Any other questions about the amendment? Hearing and seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there any additional objection to amendment number 5? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 5 is approved. That brings us next to amendment number 6, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 6.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number 6 removes sections 50 and 51 from the bill, which requires the pretrial risk assessment tool to be verified by peer review.
And I think that Ms. Mead can actually provide a little bit more detail about some of the unexpected, I guess, confusion, for lack of a better word, that arose from what we had adopted it in House Bill 145.
Thank you. For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I had noted that the amendment that added this, the peer review of the pretrial assessment tool, would create an anomaly that perhaps the committee wouldn't want to have there, and that is the wording of that provision now says that before a tool can be adopted, it has to go through certain steps that the current tool that's being used has not gone through. So if that were the law and became the law on July 1st, the current tool would be not in compliance with the statute and would not be able to be used, and yet other provisions of law, namely the bail statute, tell the court how to use this score in order to figure out what standard to use to set bail. So the issue with the amendment or the current bill is that it creates a lot of gaps. It says that you can't have a tool unless it does this. The tool doesn't do that, and yet other statutes keep referring to using that tool. So that was the anomaly that that I noted. It would put the court in a difficult position.
Any questions for Ms. Mead, Representative Eastman?
Thank you, to the chair. Well, I guess my first question would just be, if we have a tool that has problems and is not peer reviewed, should we be using it in the first place?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, that question assumes things that I guess I'm not prepared to go into. There is a tool. It has been approved by the commissioner, and we're using it. So all I'm pointing out is that the way this provision of the current statute is, that's proposed to be pulled out, would leave people in a limbo, purgatory, depending on your religion.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair. And so what's the court's view on how this issue should be addressed, if not as currently in the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, we leave those decisions to the legislature.
And Representative Eastman, someone in response, I had talked with Representative Shaw, who brought this amendment, and I suggested that rather than try to get it where it clearly needs a fair bit of fine-tuning to actually get it consistent with present-day reality, that we should look at this as a kind of an independent bill, and I told him I'd work with him to get something introduced soon, although recognizing the timeline that might happen during the interim, but I told him I would be very supportive of figuring out a way to make sure we do this appropriately, to include the peer review as part of the process going forward, but not try to undo history.
I was just going to add one thing that might be of interest, and that is the tool, and I didn't create the tool, and I'm not defending it, but it is currently undergoing a validation process by the University of Alaska, which is looking at the data used to create the tool as well as all the data that came out of the use of the tool in order to figure out if that tool needs changing. I don't know exactly where that is, but I've heard that that revalidation and perhaps recommendations for changes to the tool would be coming this summer.
So Representative Wool and then Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, so I just want to make sure I understand this amendment. And that is, the amendment is asking for a peer review. Is that a peer review of the whole concept of the pretrial evaluation tool, or is it on each score that gets released, do they look at that score and then?
I'll actually answer the question first. Representative Will, you've actually got it backwards. The amendment that was added into House Bill 145 at Representative Shaw's request and our approval, that's now been incorporated into House Bill 49, so the amendment actually takes out the whole process of peer review, at least for now. But and I can add that what I was advised by a couple of folks, including folks from corrections, that the typical cycle with these risk assessment tools is that the first year after it's in place, there's an expectation to revalidate, which is what's happening right now. And then after the first revalidation, then it happens about every 3 years. So the goal would be to have statutes that made sure there was peer review on the every 3 years review of the assessment. And so the purpose, this amendment takes out that discussion. And I'm not sure what that does to the question you're asking.
Thank you. That clarifies a lot, and I missed that amendment being introduced. So thank you for that clarification. So this would remove that language because it's inconsistent with practice or practicable behavior. So thank you.
Yes, through the chair.
Representative Ledoux.
Is the validation process, which you referred to the university doing, is that peer review or is peer? I guess I'm not really absolutely sure what peer review is, because the university would be university academics. Who would be the peers who do the peer review?
Ms. Mead, are you?
Through the chair, I am probably not the best person to ask who the peers would be. I'm sorry.
So Representative Ledoux, I actually, is the process of looking at this, I did some review, and a very typical example of peer review actually occurs at the university level. Somebody, say a doctor, writes an article about knee replacements and what's a good knee replacement. They submit it to a journal. So that either the doctor or the journal would then send the article out for peer review by other academics in the same field with similar expertise that would provide back response to whether that was good research, bad research, needed to be improved, or something else. And so the notion that the amendment introduced is that when there's a validation going on, we shouldn't just get the opinion from, in this instance, UAA, but actually have others that have similar expertise take a look at UAA's analysis and provide feedback on that before we formally consider that analysis.
And so if UAA does this validation process, then without either the amendment introduced by Representative Shaw or a new bill introduced by Representative Shaw, there wouldn't be any procedure for, after UAA has done its validation process, for it to be sent out to, I guess, prosecutors and defense attorneys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's very different than peer review. I have part of the.
Who are the peers?
Well, the peers typically would be other academics that have background and expertise in that particular field of risk assessment tools, which there are in several other states, and so you'd want people to look at what we've done and compare that with how they've done it in other states.
But
I will, just in terms of process as well, because they sent out a bid and UAA got the bid for doing the validation, and that process is in place, I've talked to the Department of Corrections about whether they may be able to add to that proposal and get the UAA analysis peer-reviewed before it gets finalized, and that wasn't part of the bid initially, and whether or not they can do it is an open question, but this is more about what happens with the next validation.
So I mean, when you explain peer review in the context of doctors, I mean, that kind of makes sense because you've got doctors who are working on the university level. But when you're explaining it in the context of a peer review for this kind of tool, it would seem to me that there need to be peers who are more involved with this thing than simply academics.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we can alleviate a lot of rabbit holes if we just look at the amendment that Representative Shaw offered on Section 51 of the amendment, page 30. It describes exactly what peer review is. The commissioner is the one authorized to approve the risk assessment tool, and the commissioner is the one who deems who is technically qualified to assess that instrument and makes sure that three separate entities that they deem are technically qualified in that subject matter to do that. And he collects that analysis and puts it out again for additional research as necessary, but it's defined very explicitly in their in that section of the bill what peer review is.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, I don't need to go there.
All right, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I guess my question for whoever can answer it through the chair would be, how long do we expect this process of peer review to take to where this amendment would be helpful? Or not this amendment, but the underlying text that we already passed.
I can tell you that the last I heard a presentation from UAA about their process, they predicted they would complete their validation before the end of our fiscal year, so by the end of June. So this law, were we not to pass this amendment that removes these provisions, that would become, it would become effective after they'd already completed the validation. So really the goal, which is why I've suggested and talked with Representative Shaw about, let's bring this back up, but the real goal is to try to have that in place for the next assessment that by schedule would be in 3 years. And of course, the department could do another assessment more sooner than 3 years if they chose. All that gets into questions of cost, and I suppose no one would suggest we should start until we at least looked at the current validation that's now in progress.
All right. So do I understand then that if we adopt this amendment, that there won't be peer review for as much as 3 years, or is it some shorter number than that?
Well, I think you're confusing peer review with validation. Right now, you couldn't really do peer review without something for them to review. So peer review doesn't happen in the framework of something for them to be reviewing. So I think the answer is that the next time to do peer review of a validation would be the next time the department chose to do a validation, whether that happened next year, whether that happened in 3 years, would be for the department to decide.
Mr. Chairman, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Representative Cobb. Yeah.
So on that note, is it possible to put a different effective date on that section of the bill?
Well, I guess this is the answer in which I say there's a lot of interest in trying to move bills forward. This is an example. In the same way that we recognized about the production of pictures, the more we dug into it, the more confusing and the more, I mean, we can delay this bill for a couple of days, and we can try to get language that answers
all these issues.
Could probably successfully do that in a couple of days, but if we're really anxious to try to move these bills forward.
We're not really talking about the merits of peer review. We're talking about the drafting time. I got you.
Right.
I missed that.
Yep. I'm a big supporter of peer reviewing, and I actually encourage the department, even though it's not probably required under the current contract, to see if they can have the current validation peer reviewed, even though it may not have been part of the original RFP. So I totally support peer review. I just think we're this sausage isn't ready for prime time. All right, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Representative Kopp kind of, I think, might have sensed where I was going as well. And I would like to propose conceptual amendment one to amendment six, which in lieu of getting rid of the language, simply adds an effective date for that portion of the bill at 18 months from enactment. That would give, hopefully, time for the validation and then ample time for us to ensure that there was some peer review that could take place. I'm not comfortable with getting rid of peer review entirely.
You've made the motion. I don't think you need to comment on it further yet. I will object to the conceptual amendment for purposes of discussion. The conceptual amendment would be language that would make this effective 18 months from the date the bill passes. Representative Eastman, did you want to make further comments as to the proposed conceptual
amendment? No, I think that pretty much captures it.
All right. I will maintain my objection because I think even with the 18 months, there's more work that needs to be done to really make it make sense. But further questions, comments, Representative Stutz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, my comment would be I'd like to hear from the maker of the amendment as to
the old amendment.
The old amendment.
Right.
As to how you feel about the amendment to the old amendment.
Thank you. And through the chair, Representative Stutz, after talking to council, I have no problem with the changes, absolutely none. I think because we're looking at the potential of doing a better job of it down the road. So I'm fine with it.
So, follow up?
Representative Stutz.
So you're opposed to the amendment. You would just as soon have this removed from the bill?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. I just want to make sure I didn't have a double negative question.
We're tending along that path. Right. Any further questions or comments about the conceptual amendment? Hearing and seeing none, please call the roll as to conceptual amendment number one to amendment number six.
Representative Shaw.
No.
Representative Kopp.
No.
Representative Stutz.
No.
Representative Ledoux.
No.
Representative Bull.
No.
Representative Eastman.
Yes.
Chairman Clayman.
No.
That's one yay and six nays.
So by a vote of 1-6, conceptual amendment number one to amendment number six has failed. Is there any further discussion of amendment number six? Representative Eastman.
My comments on amendment six, and I appreciate some of the challenges that have come into play with this amendment, but it seems clear to me that the tool we're currently using is broken. So I was glad to see that there would be some type of further validation through peer review through the bill that we already handled previously. But with this now being taken out and no specific end date when that might be reintroduced, I'm concerned that we'll continue to use a broken tool. And so I will be opposing the amendment.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We heard testimony in this committee, several weeks ago from some, I believe it was people at UAA. I forget exactly which department or description they had, but they went over a lot of provisions and looked at this actual tool, assessment tool. And I don't think the jury's out that it's broken, and I think they had some good results. And some of the data was inconclusive. They're still waiting on some other things, but it took away a lot of the financial aspect of when people can get bailed, post-bail, and people showing up for a trial and those kind of results. I would not say the system is broken.
Thank you. Any further comment on amendment number six? Hearing and seeing none, Representative Eastman, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Or you actually, I withdraw my objection. You're making an objection. So if the clerk would please call the roll.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Stutz.
The negatives here.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Representative Wool.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Shaw.
Yes.
Chair Kleeman.
Yes.
6-1.
So by a vote of 6-1, amendment number 6 has passed. That brings us next to amendment number 7. Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move an amendment 7.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Representative Shaw, can you, Representative Shaw, if you would describe amendment number 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment 7 repeals AS 12.55.135L that limits jail time for first, second, and third degree individuals convicted of theft in the fourth degree and similar offenses to 5 days, 10 days, and 15 days, respectively. With this repeal, these individuals would be subject to the maximum penalty in statute.
Any questions about amendment number 7? I would note that in addition to the section that Representative Shaw described, sections 1146-980D and 1146-982 relate to inflation adjustments, which were portions of the bill we removed elsewhere.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopp.
Yeah, this appears to be catching an important oversight because you're right, those are recidivist statutes which are subject to an enhanced penalty. So appreciate the maker of this amendment for catching that. I don't know if that we can never have too many eyes go over these statutes.
Any further questions, comment on? Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Yes, question for the department.
Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Law.
Thank you. Through the chair. I'm curious what the department's opinion is on Amendment Number 7.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, we view this as cleanup amendments. There are parts of the bill that would not work if the repealer section stays as it is in the CS.
Thank you very much.
Don't go far because I have one question before we finish. After we finish with this amendment, I just had one clarification. Any other questions from Ms. Schroeder or other questions about amendment number 7? Hearing and seeing no other questions, I'll withdraw my objection to amendment number 7. Is there any further objection to amendment number 7? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 7 is approved. Ms. Schroeder, I have one other question. I just want to make sure we got this right before I move the bill. Oh, okay. And Representative Kopp is going to be excused. Just to off record. So in the communication you sent, there had been a concern about, I think totally unintentionally, but in the drafting somehow we'd made it legal to possess any less than an ounce of marijuana in sort of any circumstances, and you had identified ways to correct that error. And I just want to make sure with the amendments that we've approved that we have resolved that issue that you raised.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Amendment 7 does resolve that issue.
Okay, so that resolves the issue that we had accidentally repealed a section that would have made...
It would have legalized marijuana for everyone.
Okay.
Even those under 21.
Okay. And so this means we're now treating marijuana just like alcohol by the way we dealt with the repealer section.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Wool has a question. Don't go far.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This situation, if a person over 21 is in possession of marijuana on school grounds, is that still a felony?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, yes, it is.
So follow up, please.
Representative Wool.
So what you just said earlier that it's treated like alcohol is not the case in that situation.
Ms. Schroeder.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Wool, in that particular case, yes, marijuana is treated differently than alcohol. And just to clarify, marijuana is not treated exactly like alcohol in Alaska. Marijuana is a controlled substance, and as long as you are operating within the confines of 1738, which is where the initiative was codified, it's not a crime. But if you are operating outside of that, then the criminal code would kick in. And that's different from how alcohol is treated.
I understand. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Schroeder? And Representative Kopp has come back to join us.
Keep away.
Any other questions or comments? That's the last of the amendments. Any other questions, comments about House Bill 49 as amended as it sits before us? Seeing none, Representative Stutz, may I have a motion?
Oh. I have a comment.
Oh, Representative Ledoux.
Just going to say that if this is the sum total of all of the amendments, et cetera, with respect to SB 91, that I can't support it. But if it just goes off to another committee where things can happen, then I don't have any problems moving it out.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move version 31GH1029/M of House Bill 49 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
There is one objection. Mr. Clerk, if you would please call the roll.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Shaw.
Yes.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Stutz.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Chair Kleeman.
Yes.
6 years, 1 year,
so by a vote of 6-1, version 31-GH1029/M of House Bill 49 as amended has been approved and moves from committee. Before we do that, I am going to formally cancel the meeting of this committee that is currently scheduled for 6:15 p.m. tonight. So we will not meet tonight at 6:15. If you're really bored, the door will be locked. Go find something better to do with your evening. It's supposed to be sunny and beautiful. We will also then adjourn for the day, and we are next scheduled to meet on Wednesday, May 1st at 1 p.m., to take up the matters that are listed in the calendar, and I can only tell you that those bills have nothing to do with crime. And with that, we will recess. It is 2:10 p.m.